Every staff member of a beloved gaming publisher quit their jobs this week, leaving some developers with questions. Plus, is Flappy Bird actually back? The creator says no. Tonight is September 15th, 2024, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
You know, there are a couple of times when I'm like, oh my gosh, I have no clue what I'm going to talk about on the show. And I'm like, I'm trying to scramble, like, what are like two things I can talk about? And then this week, there's like seven things I want to talk about. And so I'm sorry I could not make room for the PlayStation 5 Pro. I'm sure that we'll talk about it at some point. It was unveiled this week for $799 US. You got to pay $80 extra if you have physical games you want to play them. And you got to pay extra if you want to put it vertically, because that's extra. And it just has some better graphics. And there you go. There's the PS5 Pro. But hello and welcome to a Rest of the Industry is Hogwash edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on this Sunday night and not watching the award ceremony that's on television tonight about television, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. We do tape this show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. So come join us and interact with the show directly, and I'll be trying to read comments from chat throughout the night. But I completely understand if you can't be here live. We do have a Discord server where all this news that I'm going to be talking about has been talked about at some point throughout the week. So you can join that over at vognetwork.com/discord, and you can come join us and talk back at episodes previously. Episodes we've had previously, or talk about things that are coming up. And E3VL says, I'd watch that award show if it had exclusive trailers like the Game Awards. And see, that's why the Game Awards is mostly trailers, because people don't, the general public doesn't care about the awards. They care about what's coming next. And so they just want a bunch of trailers. And that's why the Game Awards does what it does and why it's so popular, even though a good vocal amount of people, who many of which probably listen to this show, probably wish they spent more time on the awards and talking to the developers, because they want, because the general public wants to see the trailers and they want that virality. But that's a story and a topic for another time. Tonight we do have a lot to go through, so we're going to go ahead and start. And I actually should have mentioned this last week, because we lost another a very important pioneer of the gaming industry this a couple weeks ago. It is a name that is very close to somebody who we've had on the show multiple times. In fact, he came up to me at Dragon Con's, like, I hope that on your next show, you're going to have a nice tribute to this person, to this man. And that person that asked me to do that was actually here in chat last week when I didn't do it. And I completely forgot, because I was too wrapped up trying to get Dragon Con stuff recapped. That I completely forgot. But I did not forget this time around. This is a big pioneer. His name is Andrew C. Greenberg. And there is another Andrew Greenberg that we've had on the show, who's the president of the Georgia Game Developer Association. He will even say this is the more talented Andrew Greenberg. I'm not. He said it, not me. But Andrew C. Greenberg is the co-creator of the Foundational Wizardry series of RPGs. That he died at the age of 67 a couple weeks ago. The news was shared to Facebook by his co-collaborator on Wizardry, Robert Woodhead, and also to Twitter by developer and game design professor David Mullick. Wizardry Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord was one of the first recognizable RPGs you could play on a home computer, a translation of tabletop RPGs and the games developed for the mighty Play-Doh mainframes present on college campuses at the time of the humble Apple II. Wizardry was among the first, if not the very first, RPGs to give you control of an entire party of characters, each with distinct strengths and weaknesses. Wizardry tasked players with exploring a sprawling wireframe labyrinth in first person, always on the lookout for secret doors, traps, and challenging enemies. At the bottom of the dungeon, players would find the titular Mad Overlord Werdna, which is Andrew, spelled backwards. Greenberg seems to have carried the playful moniker with him long after leaving the game industry, using it for a personal email and the username of a YouTube channel he used to document the development of a bowling scorecard program. Wizardry and the competing Ultima series would prove immensely popular throughout the 1980s, with Wizardry and its sequels getting ports to the major personal computers of the era, like the Commodore 64 and MS-DOS PCs. One surprising outcome was Wizardry's influence in Japan, where it had an even more enduring popularity and inspired the invention of the JRPG as we know it. Dragon Quest creator Yuji Horii has long cited Wizardry as a primary inspiration, and a 2022 tweet about meeting Robert Woodhead for the first time, and Horii wrote, quote, "When I think back, it all started 40 years ago when I really got into Wizardry," unquote. After co-creating the Star Saga games in 1988 and 89, Greenberg ultimately left the game industry to practice law, first focusing on intellectual property and law in Florida before becoming the general counsel of renewable energy company Excellent. It's probably excellent, but it's X-S-L-E-N-T, but it's probably pronounced excellent. However, an archive snapshot of Greenberg's personal website as well as his YouTube channel show that he never abandoned his interest in computer programming. According to a letter from Greenberg shared to a Wizardry fan site in 1999, he married Wizardry playtester Sheila McDonald and they had two children together. So while Andrew C. Greenberg left the game industry very long time ago, his influence can still be felt in everything from Baldur's Gate to Persona. So you can also play Wizardry now. It's very timely, very recent, Digital Eclipse. Not part of the Gold Master series, but they did a remaster of the first Wizardry game, and it did take input from Wizardry's creators and includes a picture-in-picture view of the original 1-bit graphics. So Andrew C. Greenberg is essentially the father of the modern JRPG, and for that we are very grateful. Wizardry was not a series I played all that much because I was unfortunately too young to really appreciate that in the early 80s when we probably had it, because I'm pretty sure my dad pirated Wizardry for the Commodore 64. I'm pretty sure it's on a disc that I have down in my basement in one of my like 10 disc boxes of Commodore 64 and MS-DOS discs, and I'm pretty sure Wizardry's probably on one of them because my dad was a filthy pirate. But it was probably too complex for me at the time. I was just a little bit too young to really understand it. That's why I never got into the Ultima games. I appreciate what Ultima did, but unfortunately, all those games that were like that were just a little bit beyond me. And I take a little shame of that because there were other people my age who were like, oh, I totally played Wizardry and Ultima when they came out. And, you know, back when I was a child, and I wasn't there. I was not there at that point mentally to be able to handle something that was that complex and that text heavy. So I never really did play Wizardry, but obviously I've played multiple games that had a first person perspective going through a grid, you know, basically games that were based on the Wizardry formula that Wizardry invented. And Rob Roberts even says, I didn't get into Ultima until the NES, which had some huge changes to streamline it. See, for me, even when I was a kid, a lot of those NES games that were like that, I couldn't really get my head around because there were multiple like SSI games that were AD&D inspired games that I tried, you know, like Bard's Tale, like I know it was not an SSI game, but Bard's Tale style games, but also like, you know, your Pools of Radiance and things like that that were released on NES. And even that was still too much for me at the time. And then by the time I probably could handle them, I had already moved on to like the 16-bit era and, you know, was getting into the more streamlined games that were JRPG variety, like a Chrono Trigger, like an Earthbound, like a Final Fantasy 3/6, whatever you want to call it. It was just a little bit before my time to understand it. But I do absolutely realize that it shaped an entire genre, and it's really my favorite genre of games came out of Wizardry. And we don't call them Wizardry-likes, just like, you know, like there's roguelikes and stuff. We don't call them Wizardry-likes, but they are. All your turn-based JRPGs are Wizardry-likes. ZenMonk11 says, I just heard of these games like a few years ago, thanks to Good Old Games, GOG.com, which is a great place to learn about these. But like I said, there is a great remake from Digital Eclipse of the first Wizardry game, and it includes the original, some of the original graphics, so you can see what we had there. But it's also available on Good Old Games. But you can play it with kind of a modern coat of paint today, and that is and experience it even with modern sensibilities. There's a bunch of news this week, so we are going to dive right in and talk about some of the things that are going on. And this first one is kind of also, it's a PSA, and it's still going on now, and it should still be going on even by the time you hear the podcast. So PC Gamer reports that if you have $1, I don't know what it is in other countries, but $1, Ubisoft's open world racing game, The Crew 2, is currently 98% off of its regular price, which means it's $1. This is actually, it's on Steam, it's on Epic Game Store, I believe it's on PlayStation, I believe it's on Xbox. I think Dark Tetsuya was saying it was also on all those storefronts. And so if you'd buy that for $1, it's $1. You can get it for $1. Now realize you need Uplay, Ubisoft Uplay. It does have its anti-cheat DRM, all that stuff. So if that's still not your thing, it's not a DRM-free copy that you're getting. But The Crew 2 is available. You do have to be online to play it right now. I got it for $1. I played it, and then I realized why I didn't really like The Crew, and it's because the difficulty settings, while so many people consider the game easy, too easy, in fact, I do not. And I can't win a race, even on the normal difficulty. Now, The Crew 1 had this, but there was no difficulty setting whatsoever because it was an online game, so everything needed to be equal for every player. At least here, they have normal, hard, and extra hard or something like that, so you start on normal, but normal's not easy for me. So I just basically drove cross-country. Atlanta is not in The Crew. There is actually no city in Georgia in The Crew. Chattanooga, Tennessee is in The Crew. And then, you know, just to the east of Chattanooga, Tennessee is Daytona Beach, Florida. So it's not an accurate representation of the United States, but I guess it's good enough. So I did that, and I'm not going to refund it, but you can get it for $1 until September 23rd. Now, why is Ubisoft doing this? Well, they also made an announcement that that is going to please fans of The Crew 2 and The Crew Motorfest and really anger the fans of The Crew 1. PC Gamer also reports that perhaps still stinging from the unexpectedly ferocious reaction to his decision to bring The Crew to a sudden unwanted stop, Ubisoft announced that the offline modes are being developed for Crew 2 and The Crew Motorfest. Ubisoft said by The Crew game on Twitter, quote, we heard your concerns about access to The Crew games. Today, we want to express our commitment to the future of The Crew 2 and The Crew Motorfest. We can confirm an offline mode to ensure long-term access to both titles. Stay tuned for more news in the coming months, unquote. The Crew 2 is 6 years old, which is why it's $1 now. And it wasn't great at launch, according to some reviewers, but it has enjoyed years of follow-on support. The Crew Motorfest is much newer and has a much smaller player base on Steam, possibly because it spent more than 6 months as an Epic Games Store and Ubisoft Store exclusive. So you can actually get a bundle of The Crew 2 and The Crew Motorfest for like $19, because The Crew Motorfest is also on sale for like $21. But if you get them both together, you actually get them both for cheaper. It's weird. The Crew 2 and E3ville says months. So I'm trying to think if I said something wrong. So The Crew 2 is 6 years old. The Crew Motorfest was 6 months on the Epic Game Store exclusive. Now it is on Steam, but it had a 6 month exclusivity on Epic Game Store and Ubisoft Store. So I don't know if I mentioned the wrong term, years or months, but there it is. There's their clarification. So there was a very much a backlash to the news about the Crew 1 getting its entire game pulled. Like, you cannot play it anymore. They shut down the servers and it's gone. Ubisoft delisted the Crew in December 2023 and rendered it unplayable as of April 1st, 2024, saying the move was necessitated by server infrastructure and licensing constraints. But rather than quietly accepting that boilerplate justification, the Crew fans pushed back hard, including a Stop Killing Games initiative that seems more serious and well-considered than the name might first suggest. A petition to the European Union hasn't yet attracted the 1 million signatures required to move it forward for a possible adoption as law, but it has attracted 350,000 signatures in less than 2 months, and that's not nothing. Ubisoft is also facing external pressure from a years-long malaise driven by numerous game delays, cancellations, and underperformance from released games. That's resulted in a long, slow slump in the company's share price, which now sits at a 10-year low. And while bringing offline modes to a couple racing games isn't going to turn that around, Ubisoft needs whatever PR wins it can get right now. You have to start somewhere, right? So remember, right now, Ubisoft is harming the shareholders. And so they need to do whatever they can to make the shareholders happy, and good PR makes shareholders happy. A time frame for the addition of the offline support for the Crew 2 and the Crew Motorfest wasn't provided, nor did Ubisoft say that it had similar plans for the Crew, which caused all this problem in the first place. As Jared Matt says, this is getting into our game companies responsible for keeping servers going indefinitely discussion. And there's two facets to this discussion, because if the question is, and this is my personal opinion now, if the question is, this is, are game companies responsible for keeping servers going indefinitely? I will say no, absolutely not. They are not responsible for keeping the servers going indefinitely. That should not be, I can't even think of how you would force them to keep things indefinitely. However, there is a question is, should they be able to make the game work without them running the servers? That's a question that's a little more complicated to answer. Should they be responsible for running the servers? I do not think so. They should not be required to run the servers indefinitely. Should they be giving, should they be allowing others to make servers that work with their games and not standing in their way with copyright police and lawyers and everything like that? I believe yes. Or should they patch in something that does not require servers at all to play their games once they shut down their servers? Yes, I do believe they should. Right now, they don't have to. Dark Tessia says, I can't speak to the Crew 2. I bought it for whatever reason. The main menu refuses to come up. Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah, so apparently the Crew 2 still has some bugs after 6 years, huh? But Motorfest to me has been easier thanks to the difficulty settings. I went back to that in anticipation of the new DLC. I will give them credit for the offline patch stuff. Shame they didn't get around to it in the time for the first Crew. There's still time. It's just, will they? And I don't know if the Crew is going to... I don't think the Crew makes enough money for them to actually make it available offline. Also, the Crew 2 looks like it is a lot of the Crew 1 with just some extra stuff. Motorfest is more like Forza Horizon. So if you liked the idea of driving across the entire United States, the Crew Motorfest is essentially it's a festival. It's a music festival that has a lot of cars racing around Hawaii. And that's the Crew Motorfest. I don't know what the harm is, unless you really don't want any of that Ubisoft DRM and you know, check and cheat, anti-cheat checking stuff on your computer. That's probably the harm. But even then, you can just buy it for a dollar, keep it in your library and never download it. And then maybe when the offline patch comes out, you'll have a AAA title for $1. And it can just sit in your Steam backlog as something you're never going to play. Moving right along in this long set of news, Bloomberg reports that the entire staff of Annapurna Interactive, the video game publishing division of Megan Ellison's Annapurna Studio, resigned this month following a dispute with its owner. Annapurna Interactive president Nathan Gary and his team had been negotiating with Ellison, the daughter of billionaire Larry Ellison. I actually didn't know that that was the money behind Annapurna, to spin off the video game division into an independent entity. When Ellison pulled out of the negotiations, Gary and other executives resigned and were followed by around two dozen other staffers. Quote, all 25 members of the Annapurna Interactive team collectively resigned. This was one of the hardest decisions we have ever had to make, and we did not take this action lightly, unquote, said it was a joint statement. A spokesperson for Annapurna confirmed that it explored a spinoff and said the parties failed to reach an agreement, which led to the resignations. Ellison said in a statement to Bloomberg News, quote, our top priority is continuing to support our developer and publishing partners during this transition. We're committed to not only our existing slate of games, but also expanding our presence in the interactive space as we continue to look for opportunities to take a more integrated approach to linear and interactive storytelling across film and TV, gaming and theater, unquote. So in this sense, if you've never heard that term, linear is non-interactive. Linear is a TV show or a movie or something that is not interactive. You will also hear linear TV as like a cable TV network. A TV network is linear TV, where one thing is going on, you can't interact with it, you can't change it. It's whatever's on is on, and that's what you're watching then. Whereas something like a streaming network, like Hulu, where you can pick what you want, that's not a linear network. The exodus has led to chaos as game developers partnered with Annapurna try to figure out what this means for their upcoming projects. As a publisher, Annapurna is responsible not only for funding the games, but for handling services such as quality assurance, adapting the products for local markets, and marketing. Over the past few days, games working with Annapurna have scrambled to find new points of contact and figure out whether the company will continue to honor its agreements. The spokesperson from Annapurna, that is still there, said that all existing games and projects will remain under Annapurna. New president Hector Sanchez has told developers that the company will honor existing contracts and replace staff who have left, according to people who asked not to be identified because the conversations were private. Sanchez, originally a co-founder of Annapurna Interactive, was brought back last month. And still there. Hector Sanchez did not leave with everybody else. Annapurna's video game division has developed a reputation for publishing critically acclaimed titles made by small teams, racking up awards with games such as Outer Wilds, not Worlds, Wilds, Stray, and Cocoon. Last month, Annapurna announced a deal to partner with the Finnish gaming company Remedy Entertainment to bring the critically acclaimed Control and Alan Wake franchises to film and TV. So that is a different Annapurna. So there is an Annapurna, like, publishing studio and company. Annapurna Interactive is a part of it. The Control and Alan Wake TV shows and films are not under Annapurna Interactive. So that is the parent company, Annapurna, has those deals. So nothing is changing with the Control and Alan Wake film and TV shows. The Hollywood Reporter said earlier that Annapurna Interactive's top executive had quit, but not that the entire team had departed. So, as Sharon Matt says, so they're going to hire new people. And yes, they're going to keep it going. And they're just going to say, all right, they all quit. We're going to bring in more people. Which is, you know, there's a lot of people that have been laid off, especially people in marketing, especially people in all this. So there's a very hungry amount of people that would love to work with the gaming clientele that Annapurna Interactive has. And so, yes, Annapurna is going to try to hire and refill those spots and reignite those discussions and keep that going, because they actually now have the name, the cachet, the name behind it. And as time goes on, people will kind of forget that the individuals that were at Annapurna Interactive are no longer there and will just want to go on to the brand and the money of the Ellison family that's funding a lot of this. So, Fifth Dream says, there goes Keita Takahashi's next game. Keita Takahashi, the creator of Katamari Damacy. Nothing is leaving. It's just they're having to find new people to oversee the all the things that they were doing. And it's about 20 people. And there are way more than 20 unemployed people in the game publishing space. They are not going to have trouble finding people. Now, will they find the best people? That's up to their. That's, I don't know. That's going to be up to whoever's doing the hiring to try to figure that, and if those people are going to want to work with this Annapurna Interactive, because we don't know why all the staffers quit, other than they wanted to spin the company off. And apparently Annapurna was like, haha, no. So we don't know all the facts as to why everybody quit, but it obviously is not management, because the management also quit. So the management and the staff quit. So it was obviously them and the owners. And SJR and Matt does want to point out that when I say Larry Ellison, he is the co-founder of Oracle. So one of the top tech companies in the world. He's got several big yachts all around the world that he lives on. He is your old world tech billionaire. You know, kind of in the same class as like Bill Gates from Microsoft, in that class, and not your new world tech billionaire that runs social media networks and make billionaires become millionaires. So we don't know anything else why they all resigned, other than they wanted to be independent. So maybe they're all going to just, now that this is out there, they're going to start up a new studio and they're going to have to start from scratch. They're not going to be able to poach from Annapurna Interactive stable of clients, because they're going to keep them. But maybe over time, people will sign deals with this new studio and it'll be the same ones. And maybe that's how they're going to go. And they're going to just make their own studio with more wholesome blackjack and more wholesome people who crochet with hooks and stuff. That's probably what they're going to do. Another game studio, game development tool, or something about game development, they've changed their minds to reverse something that they had done earlier that they shouldn't have done. And it's caused a lot of turmoil and a lot of people being like, now I need to learn an entire new programming language because I don't ever want to use them. And they're trying to get you back. And that's Unity. Kotaku reports that the Unity game engine is canceling its controversial runtime fee and returning to a more traditional subscription model for its popular video game engine used by small and big developers worldwide. However, the price of some subscription plans will increase next year. So, last year, back in September 2023, Unity announced a seismic change to how it charged developers to use its engine. Once a game was downloaded a certain number of times and had made a specific amount of money, Unity would start charging developers a runtime fee every single time someone installed any game developed using Unity, like Pokemon Go or Cuphead. Many smaller developers and creators criticized the decision and claimed it would lead to developers abandoning the engine to avoid paying thousands of dollars in install fees. This could have led to game delays, and there was even a fear that some devs might remove older games from sale, preventing players from reinstalling them in order to avoid the runtime fees. All this was a giant mess that eventually led to Unity partially walking back some of these decisions a week later. It also led to Unity's CEO retiring and another exec resigning, and now, after all that, the company is fully ditching the install fees completely. So I believe that was John Ricciatello that was the CEO that resigned. I believe that's who that was. On Thursday, in a blog post on Unity's website, CEO Matthew Bromberg announced the news that effective immediately, the company was removing all runtime fees from the engine. He said, quote, "I've been able to connect with many of you over the last 3 months, and I've heard that time and time again that you want a strong Unity and understand that price increases are a necessary part of what enables us to invest in moving gaming forward. But those increases needn't come in a novel and controversial new form," unquote. So I actually I understand that as well. I am a software developer myself, not in the gaming industry. The stuff that I have done that is gaming adjacent was all in Unity. Unity is what I know. I know, like, I don't know if it's Godot or Godot. I know the painter's name is Godot, but I can't remember what they pronounce themselves. But that game engine started getting a lot of popularity because it's very Unity-like, but it's not the behemoth that is Unreal Engine. And a lot of people were turning to that engine and trying to learn that rather than using Unity because of these things. But I do understand that prices are going to have to go up. Prices are going up everywhere. I hate that it's happening, but it's happening. And unfortunately, that also Unity needs to be able to pay people to do what they're doing. And that is something that we just need to accept. And so the way that they're doing it is through raising subscription prices to the actual big players. So if you want to create a game jam game in Unity, nothing changes for you. You're going to use the free version. It's going to be just fine. Runtime fees are gone and Unity will return to a subscription model. So the Unity personal licenses will remain free until a game brings in over $200,000 in revenue or funding. So if you're just making a game, and it's a small, you know, small project, you're not going to make, you know, you're not going to become rich and famous from it. Nothing changes for you. Everything's still free and you're going to be just fine. Meanwhile, starting in January 2025, Unity Pro subscriptions will increase by 8% and cost $2,200 a year per person. So that is like if you have a company of five people, you're going to have to pay $2,200 times five per year for five people to be able to use Unity. Unity Enterprise will also see a price increase of 25%. Unity Personal will remain free with the revenue and funding ceiling increase from $100,000 to $200,000, giving developer more flexibility before being subjected to the fees. The Made with Unity splash screen will be optional for games developed with Unity 6, set to launch later this year. So the minimum subscription requirements for customers are generating over $25 million a year. So that is what... if you Unity Enterprise, you would only pay for if you make over $25 million in a year at your company. So those are your, you know, larger independent studios. Your larger AAA studios and your very, very large independent studios. Bromberg stressed in his blog post that Unity will continue to increase prices as it needs to, but will only do so annually via subscription fees going up. It won't try to squeeze pennies out of every developer using the engine based on how many times people install your game. Questbuster says, from what I understand, everyone responsible for the runtime fee catastrophe have quietly left the company, the last one earlier this year. And that's because ZenMonkey11 says, I hope they don't try to sneak it back in. It sounded like a really bad idea. And yes, one of the people that's at Unity right now is Larry Herb, Xbox Live's Major Nelson. And he was one of the ones that probably was in the room trying to say this is what developers really want, because Major Nelson did spend a lot of time talking with developers when he was at Xbox. He spent a lot of time talking to gamers when he was at Xbox. And now he is at Unity. And this was probably something that he was very happy to announce. And I bet this probably came up when he was interviewing for the position, because he didn't want to work at the company that was having these runtime fees because of the bad PR. And so knowing that this was coming, because he was the one that I actually saw announce it, I bet made him very, very happy. And Mike Duff even says Larry Herb is one of the good ones. There's a lot of good ones in the game industry. You just don't hear about them. Just think of how many developers that have been laid off and people in the game industry that have been laid off just this year. And I think it's like 11,000. I would say that, you know, a good 99% of those were the good ones. There are always bad apples everywhere, but there's a lot of good ones. Somebody who is not one of the good ones is are predatory companies that are coming into the game industry as not game developers. And this is the story I didn't think I would actually get to. I'm actually making good time. I'm actually speedrunning tonight. I've had like five stories, and this is usually how long it only takes me to get through one. The Verge reports that last week the Flappy Bird Foundation announced a game called Flappy Bird. But while this group has been framing it as the triumphant return of a classic mobile game, Flappy Bird's original developer, Doug Nguyen, isn't calling it a comeback. In fact, he says he's not involved at all. So he posted as much on social media for the first time since 2017, saying that he didn't sell anything. The Flappy Bird Foundation wrote in the announcement it shared with the press last week that it had, quote, acquired the rights from Game Tech Holdings LLC, unquote, which has secured the trademark from Nguyen, but it doesn't appear as though that was the result of any dealings between him and the group. Okay, I am actually editing this right now, and I realized my big mistake. You're going to hear the name Doug Nguyen multiple times. I'm not going to edit all of them out, but it's actually Dong Nguyen. I am really sorry. I have no excuse other than maybe my head just made the N into a U, and that's why I said it multiple times. But the Flappy Bird's creator name is Dong Nguyen, not Doug Nguyen, which is going to be said like 30 times in the next couple minutes. I really apologize. All right, now back to the show as it aired live. So how this has worked is GameTek filed in opposition of Nguyen's Flappy Bird trademark in 2023. The filing came nearly a decade after Nguyen pulled the then popular game and never released another version, and the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office determined his trademark to be abandoned, terminating his claim to it in January. The Flappy Bird Foundation didn't say in its announcement that Nguyen was involved, but it certainly leans on nostalgia as it promotes the game. More than half of the game's first trailer lingers on the game's rise in popularity and the disappointment of its abrupt disappearance in 2013, before declaring that...
In 2024, Flappy Bird will fly again.
As for the crypto piece of the puzzle, cybersecurity researcher Varun Binawal pointed out hidden pages on the Flappy Bird website that indicate that there may be such a component in the game's launch. One page that seems to have been removed said Flappy Bird will, quote, fly higher than ever on Solana as it soars into Web 3.0 and invites you... players to build, create, play, and stake to own, unquote. So Flappy Bird is listening is coming soon for iOS and Android. So so what essentially happened is that crypto enthusiasts bought the Flappy Bird trademark from the group that took ownership of the Flappy Bird trademark. And they are going to use it as their next push for crypto and, honestly, NFTs. We thought NFTs were dead, but what if you remake a popular viral game from people's childhood at this point? You know, because a lot of, you know, 10 and 11-year-olds played Flappy Bird, and now they're 20 and 21 years old, and they're starting to learn about crypto. What better way to get them into the NFT craze than going on nostalgia, right? So the interesting thing about trademark law, and this is a story I like telling, is this is why you will see really terrible remakes of things. It is literally so this does not happen. This happens a lot in TV and movies, where it's the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, they say that if you don't do anything with your trademark over 10 years, you've abandoned it. And that's what happened here. Doug Nguyen did not do anything with the Flappy Bird trademark for 10 years. It was considered abandoned, returned back, and another group, this GameTek Holdings, picked it up. They took over the trademark because Doug Nguyen abandoned it, and they filed a challenge. There was no rebuttal. Doug Nguyen wants nothing to do with it, and so they took it. And E3VL says, Winnie the Pooh, this is different than copyright. This is different than copyright. This is trademark. I'm going to tell you about Dick Tracy. Because this is true. You can actually look this up on YouTube. It is the weirdest stuff ever. And I will tell you exactly what's going on and why it's happening and why there are multiple versions of this. So, Dick Tracy, the movie, was a 1990-1991 movie starring Warren Beatty. And the reason it's starring Warren Beatty is because Warren Beatty has the film rights and the film and television rights to the Dick Tracy character. And he made the movie, and he wanted it to become a series, like on TV, film, multiple movies. And unfortunately, the movie did not do well enough. The studios are like, no. But Warren Beatty has the rights. And so studios would come to him and be like, well, we want to reboot Dick Tracy, but we don't want you, we're going to cast a new Dick Tracy. And Warren Beatty says, no, I'm Dick Tracy, and I have the rights, so you have to cast me. And so talks fail. But if Warren Beatty does not produce anything and release anything with that Dick Tracy trademark once every 10 years, the rights revert back to whoever owns the actual comic characters. That Image Comics. I'm not enough in the comics. So, what Warren Beatty does is once every 10 years, he funds, produces, and releases a 30-minute TV special featuring him as Dick Tracy. Warren Beatty is Dick Tracy, and usually is like doing it as an interview with noted entertainment critic Leonard Maltin. And they actually sit and actually, like, Dick Tracy makes fun of Warren Beatty, but he's in full Dick Tracy yellow outfit. And every 10 years, he finances this, shoots it, produces it, and releases it. And I believe, like, Turner Classic Movies, the TCM channel, actually airs it once at, like, 3:30 in the morning, because that's the spot that Warren Beatty bought during all the infomercial time. They air it once. And that resets the clock on Warren Beatty having the trademark, the rights, the film rights to Dick Tracy. He has done this three times. The most recent time was just like 2 or 3 years ago during the pandemic. So it's literally called Dick Tracy Zooms In. And it's literally a Zoom conversation with Dick Tracy on Zoom trying to figure out how to use a webcam and how to use Zoom, talking to a really old Leonard Maltin. And yes, you can find this on YouTube. It is on YouTube. All of them are. And there's this whole like line of Dick Tracy hating Warren Beatty in the movie, even though it is Warren Beatty playing as Dick Tracy. So it's very self-aware in that. But it literally only exists, so the rights to the movie do not go back to the original owners. He has to do that every 10 years. You also see this with other franchises and other things. Fantastic Four is very much... you see this. This has happened multiple times with Fantastic Four. There was even an entire Fantastic Four movie shot specifically to keep the trademark. It never was released. The actors didn't know it was never going to be released. It was like in the 90s. And you can find it. Like, it's out there. It's not, we're not, they didn't delete it like they were David Zaslav. But it was never released. But it was created just to keep the trademark. And that's why you see a Fantastic Four reboot, or you did at least, every 10 years, because Fox didn't want to lose the rights, the film rights to the Fantastic Four back to Marvel. Now it's back with Marvel, but that's because of other reasons. But that's why you had new Fantastic Four movies with new casts about every 10 years. That way it didn't revert. The Amazing Spider-Man was kind of the same way. They needed to do something with the Spider-Man license so it didn't revert back. Sony didn't want it reverting back to Marvel, so they had to put out The Amazing Spider-Man in order to keep the film rights. So what that's telling you is that companies have to do something with a franchise in order to keep the trademark. And Doug Nguyen did not do that for Flappy Bird. So, and he lost it. Doug Nguyen now has no rights to the Flappy Bird trademark. He abandoned it. He did nothing with it. And now Crypto Bros have come in and made it their own. And now they legally, there's nothing legally wrong with what anybody's done here. They legally own the trademark for Flappy Bird. They legally own the rights to create new games called Flappy Bird. And they legally have the right to now sue anybody who makes anything that's a Flappy Bird clone and calls it Flappy Bird or any variation thereof. Which is why the question that got asked a lot on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord, is Flappy Vog coming back? So what Flappy Vog is in Vog Network lore is we had a game jam that Loki still never finished his game in the game jam. It was supposed to be for 1 month, and it's been years, and Loki's still working on his game. Well, actually, he abandoned it and worked on a different game and actually released it. And it's available now on itch.io. It's called Pixel Poops Number 2. Go pick it up. But I made a game before then, before that game jam, and it kind of inspired the game jam, and it was called Flappy Vog. And it was I made it in Unity, so I'm tying back the last story. Made it in Unity, but I made it using the Unity web player, so you could play it in the web. That's gone now. You can't actually play this game anymore because there's no browser that'll play it anymore because it turned out to be insecure, kind of like Macromedia Flash. Remember that? Or Adobe Flash, whatever. But I made it, and it was Flappy Bird, except it was the heads of the podcast hosts on the network, and I actually had audio from all the podcast hosts as you were going through. So if you slammed to the wall, the podcast host would say something. And it was really fun. You could play as multiple different characters. I had a secret character. You had to go through some steps to unlock it, like it was Mortal Kombat. And we eventually released how to do that. And then we had a... So it was a lot of fun. But if the Flappy Bird Foundation learns everything from the Tetris company, they now have the legal right to sue me over Flappy Vog because I called it Flappy Vog. If I called it something else and didn't use the term Flappy in it, then I'd be okay for the most part because it's not an original game concept. But the Flappy trademark, the Flappy Bird trademark, now lies with a crypto company. Doug Nguyen probably wouldn't have done anything to me about it. But you better believe a crypto company needs all the money it can get, and they will absolutely go around and take on anybody that's using the term Flappy for their game. So no, I'm not going to go try to figure out how to convert Flappy Vog from Unity 3 to Unity 5 and get it playable again. Also because a lot of those podcast hosts aren't podcasting anymore and they're not here anymore, so I don't know if they'd even be willing to still be in it and all that stuff. It was very much a product of its time about 10 years ago when I created it. Look at Wordle. Wordle, the word game that one person made. Bunch of Wordle clones came around. Then the New York Times bought Wordle from the original developer. And then the New York Times started suing all of the Wordle clones out there that had their name a little bit too close to Wordle or included Wordle in the title or things like that. So, because the New York Times can. The original developer is not going to care, but the New York Times does. And so Doug Nguyen didn't care that I made Flappy Vog, but this crypto company who needs money as much as it can get, real-world money and not just their crypto money on the blockchain, they absolutely will lawyer up and take on people who have made Flappy Bird clones and called it Flappy something over the past 10 years because Doug Nguyen hasn't done it. Mike Def said, Doug did not want anything to do with Flappy Bird. Sucks that it fell in the hands of these people. Pod Culture misses Flappy Vog, and then everybody's saying, let's see here, Yappy Vog, Face Fun Vog, Happy Vog, Slappy Vog, another victim of game preservation, RIP, Flappy Vog, another victim of game preservation Vog. How about that? We can call it that. Crypto hating Vog, Face Flap. Fifth Room says, BRB making a Pokemon Wordle called Squirtle, Squordle, so I can get sued a lot. Rob Roberts says you can just call it Pal World and you'll be fine. But yeah, so I was kind of surprised that Flappy Bird, the original, was making a comeback. And then we heard it might be a crypto company doing NFTs, doing Web 3.0. And then we heard just 2 days ago that the original creator came back from 2017 just to dunk on crypto and said that he has nothing to do with the game. And it turns out, yeah, I know he abandoned it. And if Rovio did not come in to retrieve it, because you would think that Rovio would take over the Flappy Bird trademark and, make an Angry Birds Flappy Bird. But I'm not going to play it. I'm also not going to play Flappy Vog because I don't think I could get that thing running again. Because unfortunately, Flappy Vog literally only runs in that web browser. I never compiled it for a standalone executable, and it also runs at a really weird resolution because it was designed to be embedded in a web page at a very specific resolution. So I would actually have to change all the graphics to work on a standard 16:9 or 16:10 monitor. And I don't know if I want to do that. All right, so coming up, so usually I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So I had five news stories tonight, which meant we're not doing the music break. I've got an overclock remix music break that I do every week. It's not on the podcast feed, but it rests my voice a little bit. We also sometimes take calls. Haven't really recently, but someday I will. But coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And we like to check in with them to see what's going on there and going on their neck of the woods. Sacramento, are you there?
I am here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing well. So, you know how most weeks we're like, man, it's a slow news week.
It feels like it has been lately, but yeah, this week definitely a little bit atypical, and you know, Tokyo Game Show's right around the corner too. So that's, and then of course this weekend's also TwitchCon, which is pretty big for this service that we're streaming on. So I feel like things are going to ramp up again, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be interested to hear all the stuff that happens at TwitchCon. I will not be attending this year.
I know, I'm missing it too, but yeah. Dark Sakura and Loki from Orange Lounge Radio coming up next. Yep. They are both going to be there in person, and we'll be having a lot of fun. So, and I believe Ash said hi in chat.
Yep.
Also going to be there from what I remember our discussions at Dragon Con. Speaking of Dragon Con, I'm actually glad. Good excuse to talk about Dragon Con again. There's a special little 1 hour special up on our YouTube channel over at VOG Network, where you and I did a deeper dive on Dragon Con beyond just the gaming stuff. So for those looking for that deep dive, go check that out. I just want to make sure that got a cheap plug.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, that was fun to do. We did it Wednesday night. You and I, we talked about the things we bought, the cosplays we saw, things like that, as well as a lot of our non-gaming stuff, even though I kind of went through all my stuff last week as well, like all the panels I was on. But that was because it was a slow news week. And I just I kind of wish like some of this stuff happened last week so I could have, you know, because I didn't talk about the PS5 Pro at all.
Well, we definitely will coming up. Yeah. So hold on for that.
Yeah. I mean, I talk about it a little bit, but I'm like, we'll talk about it more later. There are people that are like, I know you're going to probably talk about this on your show, but there are people in our chat that's immediately talking about world records.
Yes.
Do you want to mention that a little bit? And I know you're going to go into more detail in a bit.
Sure, yeah, we're going to go into detail at the top of OLR, so I won't go into too much. But yes, as you saw on social media this week, Loki got the book and then Dark Sakura posted about it and I posted about it. Orange Lounge Radio has now been officially recognized by the Guinness organization, Guinness World Records, as the longest running English language podcast about video games. You can find that in the 2025 Gamers Edition. So that's awesome. And really surreal to be able to say that I, you know, in part, obviously this is Jamie and Matt's award, really, really everybody's award who contributes on Sunday night. You as well, Bobby. We wouldn't still be on the air to this day if you hadn't helped us, you know, stay on the air many, many years ago. So, you know, everybody has a part of that. But it's really, really wild to just kind of think like, whoa, it's like that thing, like finally we actually did get recognized by Guinness. This is wild. I actually knew this has been coming since March. I will say that, but I never believe it until I see it in print, and there it is in print this week. So now I believe it, so it's pretty wild.
And I mean, you've been preparing for this for 15 years because that's how old that picture is.
Well, you know what's funny? I didn't have a lot of notice to get a picture to them. And there were some newer pictures that I had from a photo shoot we did with Eddie, rest in peace, who actually took probably the last, you know, publicity photos we did in the years we were on Justin TV the first time. So they weren't exactly new pictures either. But unfortunately, on this computer, I only had the ones in an orange hue. That we actually had on our Orange Lounge Radio channel at one point, long before there was a VOG Network, on the Orange Lounge Radio channel, which still exists out there somewhere. So that was it. That was the most recent promo photo I actually had. We could not get the gang together fast enough, because the bummer is when we got together for our 1,000th episode, we actually did take some new pictures in front of a golf land. You might remember seeing them on social media, but unfortunately it was too late for the book at that point. But it's fine. I had hair back then. It was nice to see that picture again. Yeah. So.
Well, congratulations on that, because I know y'all have been working on that for quite some time.
Thank you.
So what else are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio tonight that I didn't cover in like one of my like six stories that I blew through tonight?
That you didn't cover? Well, we're going to maybe be retreading some of the same ground.
You better,
Don't worry. We'll get some other stuff, too, including some updates on Evercade. We'll talk about some bummers about Microsoft. Unfortunately, there was another round of layoffs this week, which is really frustrating to hear about. Also coming to the PlayStation 5, a customizable home screen, which I think is pretty cool. So we'll talk about that as well. And all these people clinging to their digital editions of Concord. Yeah, going the way of PT, being yanked from your accounts. Yeah. So we'll get into all that and much more tonight on the world record running Orange Lounge Radio, if you can believe it.
Yeah. The Microsoft layoffs, like there's actually somebody that we both know that was affected. Yep. And I was kind of shocked that person was affected. But
they hadn't been working there that long, all things considered. So that's really shocking and unfortunate.
Yeah. So sorry to be vague booking about it because it's not up to us to say it, but it's just.
No, it isn't.
You know, it's.
But it hits a little closer to home. Yeah. It's not just a number. That's the point. Yeah.
Yeah. That person did say that of the 650, he can vouch for 649 of them being good people. But the other guy, however, he couldn't vouch for. So
that's very much his sense of humor for those
that know him. Yeah, that's his very much sense of humor. So OLR will not be here next week, though.
No, we will not. As my co-hosts are at TwitchCon, and then randomly I am in Seattle for a non-convention related purpose. So we just happen to not be here next week, but you'll be here, right, Bobby?
Yes, I will be here. And next week, there's not going to be that much gaming news. That's just the way it's going to roll. So
you never know what might come out of TwitchCon.
I know.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, we'll see. I look forward to hearing all about it. So you won't be here next week, but I will be here next week. And have a safe trip over in Seattle.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. And like I just said, I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly. But you can also join us in our Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord, or you can find us on social media networks. Blue Sky just got video, by the way, so that's a big deal. I'm Bobby Blackwolf at bobbyblackwolf.com on Blue Sky, not the .bsky.social, but at bobbyblackwolf.com is me over on Blue Sky, or at Bobby Blackwolf just about everywhere else, or on our Discord server. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But we would not be able to make this work without the people who show up. Thank you so much for being here. And some people who go above and beyond, which is not necessarily necessary. You being here is really all we ask. But we do like to recognize the people that help us kind of keep the lights on, because that's all we're really trying to do. So thank you so much. Sean322 for resubscribing. Thank you so much. And then a bit update, spending 100 bits just to have me say, sports ball update. Sorry, Bobby. Your Falcons are going down tomorrow night. Go Eagles. So here we go. In Bobby Blackwolf lore, I should explain this. I used to be game day entertainment for the Atlanta Falcons for 8 years. I was a member of the drumline for 8 years. I would have gotten a ring had Tom Brady not been Tom Brady. We were fired after that. I am actually still bitter about it. I should let it go. It's been years. It was 2017, and it's 2024 now. I should let it go, but I still don't care. Now, that being said, I still care about college football, and my dogs had a very rough performance last night. Got out of Lexington with just by a point. We're no longer the number one team in the land. Texas is back. Okay, yada yada, whatever, horns down, whatever. But the Philadelphia Eagles that Sean322 is talking about is made up mostly of former Georgia players. In fact, I actually have a neighbor who has a shirt that's like the Philadelphia Eagles like tail thing with a Georgia Bulldog as the face, and then it's got Eagles with the G being the power G, the red version of the power G, not the green version of the power G. That's a different team. So really, I'm kind of conflicted. A, I don't care about pro football anymore. I'm either college football or association football or soccer, as people talk about it. But I'm still bitter about the Falcons. So there's your lore dump that you didn't want about sports ball. And before I talk more about sports, I'm going to hit this button, which is going to make the music come in, and it's going to make me stop talking in about 5 seconds. So I will see you next week. Play some Wizardry. Go get the Wizardry game from Digital Clips and play it. I'll see you next week. Bye.
A winner is you.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom, although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.